Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Rock Valley Christian Church. My name is Josh. I'll be your substitute teacher today, and we're going to be doing a quick little mic check here because I seem really loud. Am I really loud right now? No, I feel all right. Okay, good. I'm telling you, I go high. So, not Brian Smith high, if you know that reference. Brian Smith goes from like 0 to like 15. I'll usually cap out at like a 12. So welcome. I'm going to be the substitute teacher today. I'm glad you guys are here. And I hope you guys, if you're new to Rock Valley, if you haven't been here or if you have been here and you're just kind of feeling like, you know, I don't know, where it's not clicking as much, I hope you find community and family here. I did just get back from the Midwest and got to see my family, which was nice. So we went out in Ohio, and it was 45 degrees the week before we got there, and then 45 degrees the week after we got there. And while we were there, it was 9 degrees, and it hurt my face. Like, my face hurt. I went outside, was totally dominating in a snowball fight. My kids did not see what was coming. Like, literally, I ambushed them, side of the face. Great shot. But my face hurt. It was so cold. So of all the reasons why we are here in California, that's one of them. But the biggest reason we're here in California is that we found a community and a family here at Rock Valley. We love it, and I hope that you guys get to have that as well. And so Rock Valley is a good place to be. We're going to start today in 1 Chronicles. 1 Chronicles 4:10. You don't really have to turn there. That's not going to be like the main text. That's just kind of like a reference text to start us off, to kick us off. We're going to be looking at, and you guys may remember this verse. It was very popular about, I want to say 20 years ago. 20 years ago, it was really, really popular. 1 Chronicles 4:10. It says, Jabez called out to the God of Israel, "If only you would bless me, extend my border, let your hand be with me and keep me from harm so I will not experience pain." And God granted his request. Do you guys remember the book, The Prayer of Jabez? About 20 years ago, right? It was super popular. I don't know. That's just from what I'm remembering there. But The Prayer of Jabez. And like whole ministries are built, probably still built around this concept of like, pray to God. He wants to bless you. He's going to enlarge your territory. He's going to grant the requests of your heart. And man, that's a good church to go to if it was completely true, right? So if it was true, I'd be going there. Forget Rock Valley. But they made a book about this. I think my parents had the book at one point, and like, I don't know how you can make so many chapters about this. But basically, hey, pray to God and good things are going to happen. And we still hear that with certain pastors and speakers, the concept of, and I'm not saying this can't happen, and I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm just saying it hasn't happened to me, where God's like, you know what? You need to give. And so this person gives, even though they're financially unable to do so. It hurts them to give. And then they're like, well, God told me to give this $100. And then they're like, they'll talk about how in the mail they got $110 or whatever it is, or they were able to pay. And I'm not saying that doesn't happen. I'm saying that God can definitely do that. He just hasn't done it necessarily for me. And I'm not sure that our prosperity is of his utmost concern. Because of all the things to worry about, having a nice pair of shoes probably isn't on the list, because God worries more. God's desire is more for our hearts and our well-being and our prosperity in the spirit and knowing the riches of his glory and his grace, the riches of his being in his presence, not just here and walking in his path, but being in his presence forevermore. He's more concerned with us getting there than having a nice sushi dinner tonight. It's not the Day of Atonement, so I can make food references. I got chastised very strongly last time I spoke during Day of Atonement. You guys did not like the In-N-Out reference, so I'm sorry. But in fact, it has never been promised in the Bible that we're going to have those abundant blessings that Jabez had. So more likely, it's going to be in Mark 4:35. This is more likely to be the reality of our experience. So Mark chapter 4, verse 35. We'll be hanging out here just for a few verses. Mark 4, 35 through 38-ish. It says, "On that day, when evening had come, he told them," he being Jesus, "let's cross over to the other side of the sea." So they left the crowd and took him along since he was in the boat. And other boats were with him. A great windstorm arose and the waves were breaking over the boat. So the boat was already being swamped. He was in the stern, sleeping on the cushion. So they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care that we're going to die?" This is probably more likely our experience, where we feel like we have to wake Jesus up and be like, "Jesus, do you even care if I'm about to die? Do you even care that I'm about to perish? Because I have followed you." Now, in this, we're going to do some extrapolation. We're not going to do juxtaposition today. We're going to be doing extrapolation. So in this story, in this understanding that we have of the scriptures, the disciples are following Jesus. They have chosen to give up everything they have and follow him. They have learned at his feet. They have sat down. They have served him. They have served each other. They have served the community around them. They are following Jesus as best they can, probably better than I'm following Jesus, because they actually just like literally followed Jesus. The saying was, "May the dust of your rabbi cover you," because they were supposed to walk so closely behind their rabbi that they were covered in whatever he stepped in. Right? That wouldn't be so bad. I could get on board with that. Or at least I say I could. And so they're following Jesus, and they say, I have to wake him up. "Yo, don't you even care? We're about to die." Now, if you haven't ever experienced a sea in storm, I'm sure it's pretty terrifying. I haven't ever done it. But there's a quote from an author that says, "There are three things all wise men fear: the sea in storm, a night with no moon, and the anger of a gentle man." The sea at storm would be terrifying. And I'm going to posit to you that this is our baseline. The baseline of our existence, the baseline of what we can expect, what we are going to be looking forward to as we walk this earth with Jesus. And if you think that I'm making that up, let's go to see what Jesus says. And it's going to be in John chapter 16. What does Jesus say? So we have this story. The disciples are walking. They're in the middle of a storm. But what's Jesus say? John 16. "I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. You will have suffering in this world." You will have suffering in this world. This is what Jesus says. Like, "Hey, come follow me. The Son of Man doesn't have a place to lay his head. He doesn't have a home. He doesn't have a place to call home. But hey, come follow me. You're going to have troubles. We're going to go in these storms." And I'm going to say that it is the baseline of our existence in this world. I love literature. We've talked about this before. And any good book should kind of, in the beginning of the first chapter, of the first page, it should set the course of the book for a good book. Let's see what the good book says. Genesis 1. "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness covered the surface of the watery depths." See, this phrase, and I love what David has been doing in the last month or so about relating the creation account to being us being new creations and God stirring up and creating life in us, because he did it at the beginning, wants to do that in us today. Well, guess what? We have this formless and void section of the world. And the word in Hebrew is tohu vavohu. Do you know what that is? It means nothing, but not just nothing. It's like if you took nothing. So this is how it was described to me. If you took nothingness and you put it into a blender and hit blend, it's this tumultuous, chaotic nothing. Like a storm. Like a storm of chaotic darkness. And the Bible says, in the midst of that chaotic darkness, God spoke into it. And that can be pretty tough for us to be going through. Because God has to do a lot of work before we get to the garden. A lot of work. And so the baseline is we have this tumultuous, chaotic, dark storm, and hardships and difficulties of this world are going to come. John 16:33. You will have suffering. You will be in the storm. You will be afraid and you will have difficulties. Now, there are difficulties in this world, and we all get a choice of how we're going to respond. We all get to choose. Now, if you're one of those people that sees the glass half full, then good for you. And also, we're probably going to fight. I am not one of those people. I'm closer to being like Job. Now, not saying I'm suffering like Job. I would never say that. But let's go see what Job says about his sufferings. Now, he went through a lot. And I will say this. The last sermon that I remember hearing about suffering, it was about 55 minutes into the sermon. And then the speaker, whoever that person may or may not be, goes to Job. At 55 minutes, I'm like, you're going to do a whole sermon on suffering and now just now get into the book of Job? We're going to be here for at least 3 hours. So we're going to start early. We're going to get it out of the way, and then we can move on with our day. But Job, he's just talking. This is just the natural human reaction, I feel like, at least my human reaction, is why is light given to one burdened with grief and life to those whose existence is bitter? Who wait for death, but it does not come, and search for it more than for hidden treasure, who are filled with much joy and are glad when they reach the grave. Why is life given to a man whose path is hidden, whom God has hedged in? I sigh when food is put before me, and my groans pour out like water, for the thing I feared has overtaken me, and what I dreaded has happened to me. I cannot relax or be calm. I have no rest, for turmoil has come. Turmoil, struggle, strife, the chaotic nothingness that God needs to speak into in order to make something that gives him glory. Turmoil has come. And we get a choice of how we respond. My natural inclination is to go pretty much there. I'm like Eeyore, just like, oh, man. And I just stay there for a while. And there are other people that are more positive, and good for you. That's great. I'm not good at this. And so when we have this chaotic void, this storm, this difficulty, and we can respond one way or the other, I think we have to be careful. Because in this time, we can have almost an erosion of our souls. Does that make sense to you guys, that concept of erosion? For me, it resonates because I've seen my own erosion in certain situations. I've paid attention to it, that when I have been where I am and I look back, I'm like, I wasn't always this way, but I've been hurt or I've been burdened. And it's tough. It's tough being a nurse. It's tough being an ICU nurse that worked through COVID. It's tough doing the things I've done and seeing the things I've done. A lot of us in this world, in this room, have experienced death. We've experienced hurt. We've experienced betrayal. We've experienced all these things. Not many people have held the hand of a dying 33-year-old who was alone in the room of the ICU because no family was allowed to come see him. Not many people have seen that. And going through it every day, because that story didn't change, every day erodes your soul and it erodes your compassion. So it can happen. This is a real thing. In fact, I'll read but there are different ways for that to erode. There's different ways for us to be worn down. It doesn't have to be that way. I found a quote from C.S. Lewis in the Screwtape Letters talking about and I'll go and read it. It says, the long, dull, monotonous years of middle-aged prosperity or middle-aged adversity are excellent campaigning weather. You see, it is so hard for these creatures to persevere. The routine of adversity, the gradual decay of youthful loves and youthful hopes, the quiet despair hardly felt as pain of ever overcoming the chronic temptations with which we have again and again defeated them, the drabness which we create in their lives, and the inarticulate resentment with which we teach them to respond. All this provides admirable opportunities of wearing out a soul by attrition. So we talked about the primary perspective of God not being our prosperity. And the primary objective of our enemy is not poorness for us. See, the end game is what both these sides are concerned about. Choosing life or choosing anything else that leads to death. And the primary purpose of our enemy is to erode the soul until we cannot accept the work of God in our lives. And one of the primary ways that this can happen is in relationship with people. Because it is difficult to get along with people sometimes. Right? I mean, it could be a boss at work. It could be one of your friends. Man, it's hard to get along with my wife sometimes. And we love each other. So just think about this. There's people in this room that I love, and sometimes it's hard for us to get along. And that's just because even though we love each other, even though we care about each other, we are individual people. So if that's the baseline of just like, well, you know, we're two individuals trying to come together and connect in the middle of this tumultuous, chaotic death, potential for death, waiting for God creation, how much more difficult is it to get along with people that aren't walking with God? Or how much more difficult is it when, you know what, in my best intentions, I have still hurt you, but okay, now put that aside, and it's much more difficult than in my worst intentions, I've intentionally hurt you. Like, that sucks. I had a whole different message prepared for today until recent stuff that I'm not really even able to wrestle with completely yet happened. Like, I'm not going to talk about all the things that I've gone through to get to this point today with you guys because I haven't fully wrapped my head around. I haven't fully just been able to digest all the things that have happened. But I hope that's okay, because we're going to be looking at a little bit just about these relationships, how they can just be difficult, how betrayal and hurt can come into our lives from unexpected areas. And we're going to look at how we can respond in that, even if we haven't fully processed it. Let's go to Genesis 37. This will be a main text, so I think if you have your textbooks, open them up. Genesis 37. Genesis 37, we're going to be in verses 12. We might skip around because it's a well-known story. A lot of these stories are going to be pretty well-known. We're going to be talking about Joseph. Genesis 37, verses 12 through 36-ish. See, his brothers had gone to pasture. Now, I'm reading from the CSV. CSB. We've talked about this multiple times. But if you're new and you're like, I don't know what words he's reading right now, it's because my version is slightly different. I like it. So deal with it. His brothers had gone to pasture to pasture their father's flocks. Israel said to Joseph, your brothers, you know, are pasturing the flocks. Get ready. I'm sending you to them. And Joseph says, I'm ready. All right. So good. So then Israel said to him, go and see how your brothers and the flocks are doing and bring word back to me. So he sent him from Hebron Valley and he went to Shechem. See, Joseph is doing the will of his father right now. Joseph is following obediently the word of his father, the command of his father to go to his brothers and check it. Just see what's going on. Check it out. So he's looking around for a little bit. He meets a man. He's like, no, they moved on. So his brothers, and this is in verse 18, they saw him in the distance. And before he had reached them, they plotted to kill him. Now, these are your brothers plotting to kill him. Seeing him from the distance, this is not a crime of passion. This is built up anger and resentment for years. So they see him. They're like, yo, let's kill him. Let's get him. Look at this. Oh, look, here comes that dream expert. So now, come on, let's kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Oh, and we can cover our tracks. We can say that a vicious animal ate him. Then we'll see what becomes of his dreams. I imagine maniacal laughter at this point. When Reuben heard this, he tried to save him from them. He said, let's not take his life. So he said, let's not shed blood, throw him in this pit in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him, intending to rescue him from them and return him to his father. We know what happens in this story. Joseph finally arrives. They strip him of his robe, which is a great luxury. It's a second robe. They all have robes, by the way. That's the father's job. The father's job is to provide robes. So he got this other one, this special one, this one that showed Israel's favor on Joseph. They strip him down. They throw him in the pit. And then what comes over here? Oh, we got some people. You guys interested in buying a person? Got him in this pit. Got a good deal for you. 20 pieces of silver to the Ishmaelites who took Joseph to Egypt. The betrayal of people that should be looking out for you, that should care about you, the ones that are intending harm when they should be intending to give life and love and support. See, that kind of betrayal erodes your soul, or it can erode your soul. And we'll look to see how Joseph responds after this, and then even how he responds to his brothers later, because we have that choice. But this kind of betrayal, it causes scars, it causes wounds, it causes an erosion. And so he gets sold to Potiphar. He gets sold to Potiphar, and then we're going to go to Genesis 39. Because despite his brothers choosing to inflict death upon him, to get him out of their lives, to push him away, to betray him, despite those things, Joseph gets sold to a man named Potiphar. And what happens? Joseph had been taken to Egypt, an Egyptian named Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and the captain of the guards, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, serving in the household of his Egyptian master. Now, so God is with him in this trial, right? In this storm, God is with him. And he's like, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to build you up. And at this point, if you're Joseph, you're probably like, okay, like that sucked, but also this is pretty good. Like I'm being built up. God is blessing me. God is watching over me. I am doing this work. He has put me here. Okay, and now I'm just going to, whatever your hand finds to do it with all your might unto the Lord, right? And that's what he's doing. He's like, he is blessing this man, Potiphar, with service, with honesty, with just all he can. And he's built up, and Joseph is built up in response, and God's with him. And then he's like, okay, I've got a good spot thing going on. And then all of a sudden, we know what happens, right? Potiphar's wife comes to him, says, hey, you know, let's hang out. Let's Netflix and chill. And thank you. There's kids here. So Netflix and chill. And he's like, no. And he runs off and he leaves his cloak behind because he's like, I got to get out of here. I'm out. And then he gets thrown in jail because how else can Potiphar respond? How else, what do you do with that betrayal that he's feeling, with that hurt that Potiphar is feeling, with that, that's the only response he could do. I mean, unless you're going to kill him, like, good for Potiphar for showing some restraint. So he throws him in jail again. So he gets thrown in a pit, sold as a slave, built up by God, and God's walking with him. And then all of a sudden he's like, nope, gotcha. Throws in a pit again, in a dungeon. Getting along with people is so hard. Getting along with people probably shouldn't be as hard as Joseph is experiencing. That's kind of messed up. But even in jail, what happens? He gets built up again. He gets built up again. Now, I'm going to read another quote about the difficulty in getting along with people. And it's from C.S. Lewis again, because I like C.S. Lewis. So it's an excerpt. It's called The Trouble with X, if you want to look it up on your own time and reread it. It says, I suppose I may assume that 7 out of 10 of those who read these lines are in some kind of difficulty about some other human being. Either at work or at home, either the people who employ you or those whom you employ, either those who share your house or those whose house you share, either your in-laws or parents or children, your wife or your husband, they're all making life hard for you. Are harder for you than it need be even in these days. That's true. It is to be hoped that we do not often mention these difficulties, especially the domestic ones, to outsiders. But sometimes we do. An outside friend asks us why we are looking so glum, and the truth comes out. On such occasions, the outside friend usually says, but why don't you tell them? Why don't you go to your wife or your husband or father or daughter or boss or landlady or lodger and have it all out? People are usually reasonable. All you've got to do is make them see things in the right light. Explain it to them in a reasonable, quiet, friendly way. And we, whatever we say outwardly, think sadly to ourselves, he doesn't know X. Fill in the blank. We do. We know how utterly hopeless it is to make X see reason. Either we've tried it over and over again, tried it till we are sick of trying it, or else we've never tried it because we saw from the beginning how useless it would be. We know that if we attempt to have it all out with X, there will either be a scene, or X will stare at us in blank amazement and say, I don't know what on earth you're talking about, or else, which is probably perhaps worst of all, X will quite agree with us and promise to turn over a new leaf and put everything on a new footing. And then 24 hours later, we'll be exactly the same as X has always been. You know, in fact, any attempt to talk things over with X will shipwreck on the old fatal flaw in X's character. And you see, looking back, how all the plans you have ever made always have shipwrecked on that fatal flaw, on X's incurable jealousy or laziness or touchiness or muddleheadedness or bossiness or ill temper or changeableness. I like that he keeps listing things because it's like, oh, no, yep, got me. Up to a certain age, you have perhaps had the illusion that some external stroke of good fortune, an improvement in health, a rise of salary, the end of the war, would solve your difficulty, but you know better now. The war is over, and you realize that even if the other things happened, X would still be X, and you would still be up against the same old problem. Even if you became a millionaire, your husband would still be a bully, or your wife would still nag, or your son would still drink, or you'd have to have your mother-in-law to live with you. So, C.S. Lewis's words, not mine. Just to be clear. Lisa Moser, if you're watching, my mother-in-law is a saint. She's actually one of the best people I've ever met. So, she's awesome. So, dealing with people is difficult. Joseph had to deal with many difficult situations in his life from a variety of different people. People that should not have betrayed him did. And I think that we all can understand that to some extent. Without necessarily going through a certain level of betrayal, I don't think any one of us has experienced the betrayal that Joseph has experienced. But we can understand it hypothetically and kind of extrapolate our own experiences to that level and say, man, that would be tough. That would be wearing me down. And we go through the same thing every day of our lives interacting with people. We have the potential to be worn down, eroded. So what was Joseph's response? What was Joseph's response? So guess what? He gets thrown in jail again. Hey, guess what? He gets built up again to the second, or to the right hand of Pharaoh, right? The second in all the nation. He's in control of everything that Pharaoh has. He gets the ring. He's like, do what you want. Just, you know, like, you are above everyone except for me because I'm Pharaoh. And he gets an opportunity. Ooh, that sweet opportunity for revenge. His brothers are coming and they're hungry in the land of Canaan. There's a famine. There's a famine all throughout the land. Egypt has just been dealing with it because God blessed Joseph by giving him dreams and placed him in this position where he had food and his brothers are coming to him, say, and they don't recognize him. They're like, hey, you know, we want food. We'll buy it. We have money. Here's some silver. Take it. We'll take the grain. We'll go back up home. A lot of difficult, a lot of nuances in all this story, right? But what does Joseph do? He doesn't just, so he takes one, right, and puts him in jail, and there's, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But Joseph blesses his brothers. Because, and you say, okay, well, he had a financial transaction. He didn't just have a financial transaction with his brothers. He wasn't just being a good steward of the food and the money of Pharaoh's coffers. What he did was in Genesis 42, 25, he says, Joseph then gave orders to fill their containers with grain, return each man's silver to his sack, and give them provisions for their journey. See, there was no reconciliation at this point. There was no relationship at this point. They didn't even know who they were dealing with. Joseph knew. Joseph saw. Joseph could have responded completely differently. And what did he do? He's like, all right, fill their sacks up as much as they can handle. Then, on top of that, I don't want their money. I'm going to bless them. I'm going to give them life. I'm going to give them that which they came to give me, and I'm going to bless them back because now they're getting food. Now they're going to have their silver back. And not just silver, they're going to, let's get them provisions for the road home. I want them to be taken care of. I want to bless them. I have an opportunity to hurt them. Could anything, Joseph could have said anything he wanted to, could have done anything he wanted to in that moment. Do you think anyone would have batted an eye to send 12 Hebrew people to prison, to the dungeons, to death? Joseph could have done whatever he wanted, and it would have barely been a blip on Pharaoh's radar. And instead, he chose to bring life and to bring blessing and to move towards his brothers. There was no relationship. And that's the crazy thing. So I'm reading this story recently, and he's moving towards them despite their lack of understanding. And he is wooing them into relationship. He is blessing them when he has no obligation to do so. Let's go back to Job real quick. Job 36. Job 36. And we're going to be in 16. Job 36, 16 says, indeed, God, lured you, wooed you, rescued you from the jaws of distress to a spacious and unconfined place. And this is the point, because at some point in each of our lives here, God wooed us into relationship when we had no interest in being in relationship. God blessed us when we had no business being blessed by the creator of the universe. He has done good to us when we had no idea we wanted anything to do with him. Just like Joseph's brothers had no idea who they were dealing with. And they were blessed because Joseph decided to pour out love and not be eroded in that moment. Now, God doesn't have to worry about being eroded, but we do. We're the ones living here. We're the ones that are going through this tohu vovohu, this chaotic nothingness of darkness in a blender that is spinning around us. And a lot of times that chaotic nothingness, that storm that comes upon us, comes from people around us. And in that time, there is opportunity to either bless or to harm. And my natural disposition, guess you guys can probably guess, is not to bless. It's not to bless. I'm hurt. Why would I want to give you anything good? Why would I give you the time of day? But God uses the eroded souls to bless those around you. He uses the hurt, the ones that are scarred, the ones that have been betrayed by people, to do something that they cannot do for themselves, which is to woo them into relationship with God. Because that is what we're doing. We're not representing ourselves in these relationships. We're not representing ourselves to these people that have betrayed us. We're representing God's grace and God's love and God's mercy and his character in us. So is God's character to harm, or is it to bless despite ourselves? Does he let rain fall on just the righteous, or does it fall on the righteous and the wicked? Do not the righteous and the wicked have the same breath of life in us that animate dust and dirt from which we are formed to give us life and the opportunity for relationship, not just with each other, but the opportunity for a relationship with the creator of the universe that wants to unfold a level of blessing that we cannot comprehend. And it's not the prayer of Jabez. It's something more beautiful, more perfect, because that something is him. And we can either push people away from him, or we can woo them into relationship. Like, hey, come see this God that I love. Come see this God that has blessed me beyond the ways that I can express, that has done good to me when I deserved no good to be done to me. If we can understand that for ourselves, and the relationship that we have with God that we do not deserve to have, that's going to be the first step into being able to be Jesus to someone else. Because as Joseph told his brothers, now Joseph, we're going back to Joseph. His brothers come back. He's like, yo, it's me. And they're like, oh no. But it's okay. We're going to go with dad. We're going to come down here. He wants dad. He wants to see Benjamin. Like, those are the lifelines. All right, come in. Uh-oh, dad's gone. Now he's really going to have it out for us. And so they make up this kind of twisting of the facts, right? To try, like, hey, you know what? It wasn't so bad. And Joseph said, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid for your lives. Don't be afraid that I'm going to exact revenge. Don't be afraid that I'm going to harm you. Because what you intended for harm, God intended for blessing. God intended for good. You don't see the plan that God is doing. You didn't even see it then. God, yeah, you did something terrible. And God was stirring something up and brought me here, not a few months later, years later to this point of pain, of hardship, of betrayal, multiple betrayals. But God has used and wanted to do this for good, for his glory and our good. And I think in 1 Corinthians 13, this relates to our imperfect vision of God's plan, because he says, "For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when the perfect comes, the partial will come to an end. For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I will know fully as I am fully known." We see now, but dimly. Do you guys know what a mirror was like back in the day? Like, we think, like, mirror, you could see pretty good. Like, I can see, like, oh, my hair's a little messed up. Got to straighten up a little bit. All right, looking good, looking good. A mirror back in the day, first of all, was a luxury item. And it was beaten silver. Like, that's pretty much it. You saw, kind of, like, you know, like the fun mirrors in the circus or whatever. It's kind of more like that than an actual representation of the mirror that we're seeing now. You kind of looked all funky. You kind of get the general idea of what's going on. And that's about it. So he's saying that we see in a mirror like that. But now, when the perfection has come, now when God's plan comes to fruition that we didn't anticipate happening when the bad stuff was going on, well, you intended it for evil, and now we're here in the perfect, and God has intended it for something beautiful, and he's intended it for something good and right, and something that is putting relationship back together, and that's building relationship, and hopefully having the opportunity to bring others into relationship too. Because if we talked about how God is not primarily concerned about our financial well-being, he's concerned about our end goal. He's not just concerned with our end goal. He's also concerned with our brother's end goal and our mother's end goal and our neighbor's end goal. And if he hurts you, allows hurt to come to you in order to bring both of you to glory and to see him face to face one day on that day that we're all looking forward to, then he is going to let it happen. Because his name will be brought up. His name will be glorified. He will be, just like Jesus, brought many sons and daughters to glory. See, we have the chance to be Jesus, because the end of the verse, and I'm sure you guys caught it, and I'm sure if I didn't go back to it, like, you'd be like, "Hey, Josh, you know the end of that verse, right?" I'm like, "Yeah, I know the end of the verse." We're going to get to the end of the verse. John 16:33. "I've told you these things so that in me you may have peace. You will suffer. You will have suffering in this world." And now we'll go to part B of that verse. "Be courageous. I have conquered the world." You're going to have suffering. You're going to have the storms. You're going to have the whatever. But I have conquered the world. We know this because it's told us in the beginning. The disciples were in that storm. Remember the storm? What happens in the storm? Jesus comes down and says, "Peace be still." And the waves and the wind obeyed him. Guess what? In that chaotic nothingness, the darkness and a blunder that is just dark, and that stormy nothingness that swirls around, what happened? If God spoke the word and life was brought forward. So just like the disciples in the ship were in the chaotic storm, that's how the world began. And that's where we're at now. As we walk forward, we can't control the world out there. We can only walk forward. And sometimes that walk, if we faithfully walk with God, is going to lead us into places we would rather not be. And God speaks, and it's stilled. And I think what we need to realize, too, and what is going to help us get there. Who wants a little help getting to that point? It sounds kind of hard to do, right? It sounds kind of hard to be Jesus when you've been betrayed and hurt, especially in the moment, like to be able to like respond right there as Jesus would respond. It's a superhuman, a supernatural event. And it can only come by the spoken word of God in our hearts. But let's get a little bit of perspective so that maybe we have the equipment to deal with it when it happens. So guess who we're going to go back to? C.S. Lewis. All right, C.S. Lewis, because I only read you part of that excerpt. Now I'm going to read the next part of that excerpt. So it says, it is a great step forward to realize that this is so. He's talking about that fatal flaw in X. It's a great step forward because now we're not just going to be beating our head against the wall over and over again. To face the fact that even if all external things went right, real happiness would still depend on the character of the people you have to live with and that you can't alter their characters. And now comes the point. When you have seen this, you have, for the first time, had a glimpse of what it must be like for God. For, of course, this is, in one way, just what God himself is up against. He has provided a rich, beautiful world for people to live in. He has given them intelligence to show them how it can be used and conscience to show them how it ought to be used. He has contrived that the things they need for their biological life, food, drink, rest, sleep, exercise, should be positively delightful to them. And having done all this, he then sees all his plans spoiled, just as our little plans are spoiled by the crookedness of the people themselves. All the things he has given them to be happy with, they turn into occasions for quarreling and jealousy and excess and hoarding and tomfoolery. Well, you may say it is very different for God because he could, if he pleased, alter people's characters and we can't. But this difference doesn't go quite as deep as we may at first think. God has made it a rule for himself that he won't alter people's character by force, right? We can't change people. But what's he do? He's wooing them into change. He is bringing them forward until they choose him and choose to change. I said that when we see how all our plans shipwreck on the characters of the people we have to deal with, we are in one way seeing what it must be like for God, but only in one way. There are two respects in which God's view must be very different from ours. In the first place, he sees, like you, how all the people in your home or your job or in various degrees awkward or difficult, but when he looks into that home or factory or office, he sees one more person of the same kind, the one you never do see. I mean, of course, yourself. That is the next great step in wisdom, to realize that you also are just the sort of person. You also have a fatal flaw in your character. All the hopes and plans of others have again and again shipwrecked on your character, just as your hopes and plans have shipwrecked on theirs. You see, we all have that flaw, whatever it may be. We all have reasons other people have difficulty getting along with us. We all have baggage. We all have hurt. We all have a wealth of experience that no one knows about, but has shaped us and eroded us and changed us into the people that we see. And if we can realize that we too are that broken mess and that we too are being wooed into a deeper and deeper understanding and relationship with God, then maybe during the times where people need grace that they don't deserve, maybe during those times of pain and maybe during those times of suffering and the chaotic void, we will allow God's voice to bring peace and allow us to be the tools of looking like Jesus in a situation where he desperately needs to be. You see, it's hard to do that. It's hard to be as Joseph was to his brothers. Someone I was telling about this guy, as I was like, man, this is crazy. I just read this and like God's using this in my life and or at least opening up possible doors from this in my life, and he's like, oh, I just thought that Joseph was messing with his brothers, and he's just kind of like, they'll be thinking about this for a while now. How do they, you know, they're freaking out, but we can choose to read it that way, or we can choose to read it that God used Joseph to bless. And if we can remember that we too have been the betrayer, And we too have been the instrument of hurt and the instrument of pain, an instrument of death in someone else's life. And we too have been difficult to get along with. Maybe we can take a breath in that storm and allow ourselves to give grace when we physically, emotionally, spiritually cannot do it. And that'll be the supernatural act of God in our lives to look like Jesus. I'm going to go ahead and close in prayer, and then I'll invite the worship team to come up with us as we do. And I just want to encourage you guys to just to pursue that relationship. Pursue that relationship with God. Pursue that relationship with those that have hurt you and that you have hurt. And find yourself covered in the blood of Jesus and be ready to bless those around you. Dear Heavenly Father, we just thank you for the opportunity to open your word. I pray that you would be softening our hearts and that you would be giving us a heart of flesh in that stony ground, that you would make us look more and more like your son, Jesus, and not just look like Jesus in the easy times with the people that we like and the people that are nice to us, but in the times where it's difficult and the times that you get the glory, because there's no reason why we should be being like your son. Let us be receptive to your spirit. Let us listen to your voice and let us walk obediently into the calling that you have placed on each and every one of us here. We love you, Lord. Bless us so that we can bless others and woo them into relationship with you. In Jesus' name, amen.